It is Wednesday, July 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the Trump administration allows China's ZTE to resume some business in the United States. President Donald Trump tells supporters they will be impressed with his nominee to the Supreme Court.
They have a track record. They have made clear what their views are, and their views are starkly conservative on almost every significant issue.
And singer Cardi B heats up the music charts as she prepares to welcome her first child. It's all ahead. Chinese counter-tariffs of $34 billion are expected to immediately follow scheduled U.S. tariffs on an equal amount of Chinese imports Friday over forced technology transfers and limited market access for U.S. companies, charges Beijing denies. The Brookings Institution's senior economics fellow David Wessel said at this point, the tariffs don't seem to be having an adverse effect on the U.S. economy.
The U.S. grew at an annual rate of better than 4% in the second quarter, the forecasters tell us, and there doesn't seem to be any signs outside of the directly affected industries that this is spilling over to the rest of the economy. But if this keeps up, if, for instance, the president proceeds with tariffs on autos that he's talking about, or if the Chinese get very sophisticated and start doing not just imposing tariffs, but harassing U.S. multinationals or allowing their currency to depreciate, this could easily lead to a much worsening of economic conditions, not only in the United States, but around the world. And so I think that's the big risk.
Wessel warned deepening trade fractions could lead to higher costs and even shortages, resulting in hiring freezes and a delay in investments. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has given Chinese telecom ZTE Corporation a small reprieve from a supplier ban to conduct business to maintain existing networks and equipment, while moving to block China Mobile from offering its services to the U.S. market. Grant Noonan is a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies. He was asked by International Edition's Victor Beatty who stands to lose the most in a trade war.
China, ultimately. The United States economy really is better able to absorb anything the Chinese might do. And the Chinese really are talking a good game. You know, it's not in their interests domestically to appear weak or even frightened of the United States. But anything that threatens to really cut off the foreign exchange, foreign currency inflow into the Chinese economy is something that has the Chinese Communist Party immensely worried.
In a related story, there are two Chinese telecom companies involved in some controversy with the U.S. The U.S. Commerce Department Tuesday has granted a temporary, reportedly one-month reprieve to ZTE Corporation, allowing the number two telecom equipment maker to conduct business needed to maintain existing networks and equipment. At the same time, the U.S. government has moved to block China Mobile from offering services to the country's telecommunications market. What do you make of those two developments?
The ZTE treatment really is perplexing. It is possible the Trump administration has a very clever sort of chess game in mind that somehow is going to lead to great results. But I consider it a big mistake on the administration's part. By closing down ZTE, it had really had a very powerful effect on China's leadership. And this was really a taste of what else was possible. And as I noted, that the Chinese cannot withstand for very long the cut of the foreign exchange, which they earn from companies like ZTE. Plus, it's immensely embarrassing to both China and ZTE in particular and other companies where they're treated as scofflaws, sort of companies that don't obey the law, and also espionage platforms, which raises doubts with many of their other customers too. So really, the Trump administration should have just closed it down, finished off the company, and then said, now let's talk. But by keeping it on life support system, I think they've really dissipated or weakened, diluted the benefit that they otherwise would have gotten from it. So the Chinese may be confused by what the Americans are doing, but ultimately they're probably thinking, well, no matter what we do, the Americans will always concede or sort of give us a way out. As for the China Mobile, the U.S. government is rightly concerned about the security and espionage applications to which Chinese mobile hardware and systems can be put. This really has been obvious for a long time that the Chinese do use these telecommunications companies for this kind of activity. Huawei, another Chinese company, is even worse, if anything. So from a national security perspective, this is simply common sense by the Trump administration. Business-wise, probably won't have much effect on China Mobile, given the sort of the global scope of its operations. But once again, this also embarrasses the PRC. No doubt they're probably pretty surprised that the Americans are actually pushing back for once against the things that they've been doing. If one compares or considers the China Mobile decision and the ZTE decision, they're a little bit contrary. So that probably confuses some Americans just as much as it does some Chinese.
Grant Newham, a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. A car plows into pedestrians in the World Cup host city of Sochi, killing one person and injuring others. Islamic State media announces the death of leader al-Baghdadi's son. Somali villagers resist al-Shabaab militants recruiting children. And China issues a U.S. travel warning as trade tensions escalate. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA says, according to computer models, galaxies are created when dark matter clumps together. In other words, you usually can't find a galaxy without a good amount of dark matter. That is until a recent discovery that has been detailed in the journal Nature. A group of astronomers who used both ground-based telescopes and NASA's Hubble Space Telescope found an odd galaxy out there that they say has very little, if any, dark matter. According to the study, the galaxy called NGC 1052 DF2, which is as big as our Milky Way, only contains about 1/400th the amount of dark matter that was expected. The study's lead author, Peter Van Dokkum of Yale University, says the stars in the galaxy can account for all its mass. There doesn't seem to be any room for dark matter. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, sharp divisions are on display as Americans mark Independence Day. President Donald Trump is assuring supporters that they will love the Supreme Court nominee he is set to name on Monday. This week, Trump interviewed seven possible nominees, including Utah Senator Mike Lee. If confirmed by the Senate, Trump's choice would replace Justice Anthony Kennedy, who last week announced his retirement effective July 31st. Norman Ornstein, a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, tells me all the nominees are conservatives.
Every one of these nominees, all 25, and that includes the presumed short list of five that we don't know for sure is the list that Trump has in front of him. They have a track record. They have made clear what their views are, and their views are starkly conservative on almost every significant issue.
So if a fairly conservative justice then joins the court, will the court, though, veer right? Or I know there's some speculation that perhaps Chief Justice John Roberts might become a swing vote.
I don't think we're going to see John Roberts as a swing vote. There may be an occasional decision where Roberts deviates from his conservative colleagues. We've seen that only once, which was on a case involving the Affordable Care Act. I think that was a political decision that Roberts made, knowing that if he blew up the health care system, that would define the reputation in history for the Roberts Court. But Roberts has been right over there on the right flank otherwise. And if Roberts becomes the sort of center of attention, the so-called swing vote, it's a court that has already moved to the right. I think it's also important to remember that Justice Kennedy has not been a moderate by any standard. He has been very conservative, with the exception of a small but very important set of cases. Kennedy basically supported same-sex marriages and has also supported the Roe v. Wade decision and abortion rights. On everything else, from campaign finance, he wrote the Citizens United decision, to voting rights, he joined in decisions that have basically blown up what was left of the Voting Rights Act, to hampering and kneecapping labor unions and standing with business. All of those, Kennedy stood with his colleagues very much over on the right. That's not going to change, except we may see decisions now that there are clearly five votes to move in a direction that will become more starkly conservative. Anti-union, very, very likely we're going to see, if not in one fell swoop through an erosion, the end of Roe v. Wade, and we're going to see continuing efforts to allow for partisan gerrymandering, to chip away at voting rights, and to remove what's left of the campaign finance system.
I wanted to ask you about the Roe v. Wade, because some observers think that because of legal precedent, the court will not be, it could somewhat reduce it, but could not eliminate it totally. What do you think?
You know, this is a court that has shown not a lot of deference to what's called stare decisis or precedent. I was frankly kind of amused when I saw that Susan Collins, a Republican senator who's strongly pro-choice, said on one of our television talk shows that she was confident that Neil Gorsuch, the first Supreme Court justice nominated by Donald Trump, would not overturn Roe v. Wade because he had told her during the interview before his confirmation that he was strongly for precedent. Then Gorsuch got on the court and promptly voted in a whole series of ways, including most recently on voting rights and on labor, that blew up 40-year or 50-year or longer precedents. So I don't put any stock in the belief in precedent. I do think that we're not going to see a court that will, as soon as it possibly can, just completely throw over Roe v. Wade. It's more likely to come through some smaller decisions that put more and more restraints on abortion that will vary from state to state, but where they'll accept things that have previously been unacceptable. But that will lead to, finally, a decision that will say this was wrongly decided. It no longer is the law of the land.
Norman Ornstein, a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Well, the July 4th Independence Day holiday holds a special place in the hearts of Americans. All across the country, citizens traditionally gather for picnics and fireworks on the 4th of July to celebrate the country's birth in 1776 and to reaffirm the vibrancy of U.S. democracy. But in recent years, democracy has increasingly come under strain in a politically polarized country where voices are often raised in anger and common ground is hard to find. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
Nothing brings Americans together like fireworks on the 4th of July. It's a time for the country to catch its collective breath and reflect on the democratic ideals upon which it was founded. Those ideals have turned to action in the streets in recent days, including immigration protests that drew thousands around the country.
No peace, no fear. Immigrants are welcome here.
The upcoming battle to replace retiring Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy also has heightened divisions. Both parties are energized, including Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts.
People are rising up. Donald Trump is not king. No one makes it to the Supreme Court without going through the United States Senate.
Trump supporters have also been vocal of late, enthusiastically standing with a president who vowed to disrupt Washington and restore America's greatness.
We're bringing back our pride, we're bringing back our jobs, we're bringing back our wealth. And for the citizens of this great land, we're bringing back our beautiful American dreams.
It's deeply wrong.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Political differences have sharpened during Trump's presidency, and that includes scrutiny of the ongoing Russia probe led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Polls show most Americans support the investigation, but many Republicans, like Congressman Trey Gowdy, see it as divisive.
Whatever you got,
finish it the hell up, because this country is being torn apart.
The political divisions in the country are real, and so at times is the fear, says historian Alan Lichtman.
People feel like they are being written out of America simply because of their political beliefs, their gender, their race, their religion. And really, we haven't had that for quite some time in modern America.
Thank you, South Carolina.
Because of the intense loyalty and opposition that Trump generates,
so
the president has come to symbolize the widening political divide, says Gallup pollster Frank Newport.
Trump himself is very polarizing. The public is very polarized. They're worried about the government, worried about long-term economic strength with the change with artificial intelligence and everything that's going on. So his great economic success on a relative basis has not been translated into personal approval or overall satisfaction.
For the most part, Americans like to set politics aside on the 4th of July and celebrate democracy. But many worry that the sharp political divisions on display daily make it harder to find common ground in a country where democracy is vibrant, but also under strain. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. A female rapper is getting tremendous success on the music charts. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the details.
Today, Sarah, we're going to take a listen to a brand new song by one of the hottest performers, vocalist, female artist, rappers on the planet. Cardi B is her name, and she's just become the very first female rapper to score two consecutive number one hits. Bodak Yellow was number one for 3 weeks last year in 2017, and now her new single, I Like It, with J Balvin, who's from Colombia, is a number one song. So congratulations to Cardi B. Let's check it out. The song's called I Like It.
I like diamonds, I like stunning, I like shining, I like $1 million deals, where's my pen? I'm signing, I like those Balenciagas, the ones that look like socks, I like going to the Tula, I put rocks all in my watch, I like sexes from my exes.
Okay, well, that's quite an honor for her to have two number one singles. That's
great. Yes, she's very, very excited. She posted video online of her driving in the car going, oh, Billboard number one again. I love being number one. Her album is called Invasion of Privacy. It's her debut album. When it came out, it also reached number one. So she's achieved something that no one else has achieved as far as female rappers are concerned. And the last time that a female rap artist was number one anyway was, you know, Lauryn Hill and Lil Kim and those artists, they had hit number one, but that was years ago. So she's done something that is groundbreaking, and she's also achieved something that hasn't been done in quite a while. So congratulations to Cardi B. And the last time that an artist had two number ones on their debut album was Macklemore and Ryan. The album was called Heist, and it was 2012. Cardi B is going to be joining Bruno Mars on his 24 Karat Magic Tour in a few weeks. She's expecting a baby any day now. She's made it public that the baby is a little girl. She secretly wed Offset from the group Migos back in September. They had kept it quiet until about a week ago when they finally revealed, yes, we have in fact got married. They're living together, and they have a couple of dogs. In fact, this past week,
It was announced by Cardi B that their two dogs, Bougie and Bentley, gave birth to a litter of 8 puppies. So they got a lot going on in
their
house.
They're going to have a busy household.
It's a busy, busy household. And speaking of J Balvin, who's from Colombia, he had a hit song last year with Beyonce called Mi Gente, and he's also going out on tour as well. Cardi B's real name is Belcalis Almanzar, and that is an interesting name, but you know, her sister's name is Hennessy. So she adopted Cardi from Bacardi, and she added the B, which she says stands for beautiful. So Cardi B and J Balvin, and the song's called I Like It. And she's also featured on a new song by Maroon 5 about girls. So she's out there doing a lot of stuff for somebody who's pregnant and supposedly laying low. So wait until the summer, you know, when she goes out on tour with Bruno Mars, and then she gets back in the studio and starts working on new music.
She is a very busy lady.
Very, very busy, and she's got a lot of energy. She's a bubbly person. So I love her music. I love what she does. People have criticized her, you know, for not having the best grammar, for not being the most articulate person. And she says, I am who I am. Take me as I am. And apparently enough people are, because she's number one this week.
Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
I said I like it like that.
The music of Cardi B brings us an end to our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Today, the United States of America celebrates its birthday. It is a commemoration of the day in 1776 when representatives of the 13 British colonies signed the Declaration of Independence, a separation from Great Britain. There were many complex reasons for this split. The Declaration's principal author, Thomas Jefferson, called them a long train of abuses and usurpations. But it all boiled down to a few salient points. Much of it had to do with what the colonists perceived as abuses by the British government that went back many years. So, for example, the colonists greatly resented British laws that forbade any movement or settlement west of the Allegheny Mountains, and the imposition of taxes that were meant to replenish the British treasury depleted by years of fighting. And most of all, they were angry that they had no say in the hundreds of laws that were passed by the government in distant London. Indeed, in the run-up to the Revolutionary War, the oft-repeated phrase, "taxation without representation is tyranny," well summarized the colonists' grievances. In writing the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson proposed that by the authority of the people, an independent United States would become a nation on an equal footing with European nations that governed themselves, formed alliances with foreign nations, and engaged freely in commerce. And then Jefferson went a step further and declared that all men are created equal, and as such enjoyed a number of unalienable rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thomas Jefferson stated that it is the job of a government to ensure these rights, and therefore it is important that the government derives its powers from the consent of the governed. This passage is a response to the colonists' anger over taxation without representation, and a direct challenge to the British government. Today we celebrate the signing of the Declaration of Independence and the principles it defines. The day marks the beginning of the Revolutionary War, a 7-year conflict that ended with the birth of the United States of America and the promise of a new era of freedom. In the words of Thomas Jefferson, the equal rights of man and the happiness of every individual are now acknowledged to be the only legitimate objects of government.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.